At the Races with Steve Beck.
We're back. Second half at the races, coming to you live from Tampa Bay Downs. And, of course, it's a dark day today. And they'll hi, Shannon. Shannon Arvin is joining us from Keeneland. And as mentioned yesterday, the passing of Lewis Lee Hagen III, one of those names, one of those family names that just resonates in racing history and so important to Keeneland. And I appreciate the opportunity to have you pay tribute, Shannon.
Well, thank you so much for speaking with me this morning. Mr. Hagen was truly one of a kind. He was such a character, and I enjoyed all my interactions with him. He was just so supportive of Keeneland and loved that place like so many do, but he had such a special connection to it.
And the connection, of course, you know, anybody familiar with the origins of Keeneland and essentially, you know, the past 125 years of racing. It's one of those, you know, taproot families.
Absolutely. And he was, in addition to that, he was trustee when my dad was trustee. So I have special memories of that, too. Just a lot of memories of him being around Keeneland. And he obviously was passionate about the place and the look of the place and the feel of the place and the horses. But his real passion was the trees and making sure that we had the right size tree when a tree was planted, making sure the pruning was done regularly and in the right way. And every time we look down Maple Lane, we definitely always think about him because that was a brainchild of his, and it's such a staple and signature of Keeneland. So his handprints are all over it.
Literally a half century of service to Keeneland.
That's right, without a doubt.
You know, it's interesting, too, because Dave O'Rourke joined me yesterday, Shannon, and we were, you know, talking about the new Belmont Park, and It does occur, and I mentioned this as I was heading to the break, that between Belmont's reimagination and a, you know, brand new building, the project at Pimlico, and of course what Churchill's doing to their you know, the centerpiece of the action at Churchill with the new paddock, one project that hasn't gotten maybe as much attention is what Keeneland is doing, because you're in the midst of a major renovation.
We are. It's really exciting. We have spent a couple years, really since that started, we sat back and started reimagining how our grounds should look. And you never want to touch Keeneland because it feels pretty great as it is. But at the same time, we recognized that there were some opportunities to provide some more seats for our fans. We were selling out of seats in 8 minutes. So as we looked at the grounds and tried to find the right place to start, it seemed pretty obvious pretty quickly that the area where the temporary chalets were for the Breeders' Cups when we've hosted them was a great spot to make permanent. So that's what we're doing. We've taken down our old administrative office building, which it was historic in that it was old, but it was not historic in that it had been there since the 1930s. It had been there since the 80s, actually, and was kind of a strange building structurally. So we have a new paddock building going there, and it will be able to seat about 1,500 more people, which is great. And then we have, since that those were our offices, we also have a new operations building that's going up, and we're really excited. We're working through the operations for our spring meet to make sure it's still the great experience everybody expects when they come to Keeneland. It'll feel a little different when they come in because we've got some cranes and construction equipment, but it's going to be great when it's finished.
Well, and of course, really not far away now from the spring meet and everything that comes with it. You know, between the racing side and the adjacent sales pavilion, everybody has to essentially you know, keep improving and adjusting to, you know, the demands. OBS has enjoyed an overhaul of their sales building, and it really actually, you know, for all of the criticisms of the game and of the industry, it feels like there's so many people committed to the future, which kind of flies in the face of certainly social media's narrative.
I couldn't agree with you more. We actually were talking about that yesterday. I was talking with one of my colleagues and said, you know, for a business that seems to be in so much trouble, it's investing more than $1 billion in its infrastructure and improving the experience. So we have a lot of hopes for the future.
Well, and to tie into to Mr. Hagen, Keeneland stays, you know, very much in touch with the historic aspect of the game, and you know, with the aesthetic, those aesthetics that are, you know, tied to its history, and looking forward. How far along? What is the timetable for the rest of that project?
So September 2025 is the scheduled time to be ready. So we'll be ready for the fall sale and the race meet that year with our fully renovated building.
Outstanding. Well, Shannon, I didn't want to let Mr. Hagen's passing go without acknowledgement. You know, there's so many people like him that aren't necessarily, you know, out front and well known to stakeholders, fans, and horse players. But the continuity, you know, certainly of a place like Keeneland, responsible for that, you know, for that continuity that, you know, provides the atmosphere that people love at Keeneland.
Absolutely. And he was critical to that. And we still work with his children, particularly his son, Ben, who's on our board. So I know that his legacy is in good hands.
Shannon Arvin, Keeneland, I appreciate it. Look forward to seeing you in a few weeks.
Thanks so much, Steve. You too.
Shannon Arvin and Lewis Lee Hagen the III. And a quick update about their project at Keeneland. I'm going to get to Tony, Tony is actually mentioning that for those that have had struggles, you know, we're adding a second studio in Albany, and Brian handling that, and he's going to produce you know, at least once a week, once a month during broadcast season, and so some of the streaming aspect has been a little hinky as he plugs into the system. At the same time, there's the YouTube that I've put out a couple of times when he filled in for Casey. You can use that as well if you're having trouble. And Tony just said to me, you know, that you've been having the stream has dropped on you a couple times.
Yeah, it keeps coming up offline.
All right, then I'll fix it with you. I'll fix it with you after the show. Yeah, you can. If anybody's having that kind of trouble, and this is always true, not just for our show, but for any time you have trouble linking to an audio cast of any kind, if you close your browser, clear your cache, and reopen it, a lot of times that's all it, and I don't understand the technology part of it, but that very typically will get you back to, you know, connected status. So that's the first thing you try when, because people don't know, you know, whenever there's an update to any kind of a media player, you essentially have to kind of reconfigure your connection to it and how it, you know, its outreach to whatever you're connecting to. So and that a lot of times it happens without you knowing that the media player of your choosing that your computer's using that has had an update, and that'll cause trouble. So there's always something on the technology front that'll.
And you're talking to Mr. Low Tech himself.
Exactly right, Tony. I had to, you know, I wanted to make sure to get to you. And even though I know you didn't necessarily have a relationship with Larry Letterman, he called you plenty of times at Atlantic City and at Garden State.
Yeah, he sure did. And you know, his calls, at times he would add a lot of humor to his calls. You know, I can't think of any one right off the bat, but he would take names of horses and connect them to another name of the horse in the race and turn it into a call that had some humor to it. He always was interesting to listen to, and you never knew exactly what he might come up with. And sometimes he just had a normal call, and he always was, one thing about him, he was always accurate in his calls. That's what I liked about him. And once in a while, he'd come down to the jocks room, and you'd just touch base with him, say, hey, how you doing, brother? You know, but some of his calls, you know, that he made, and you know, they just escaped me right now. The last 2 days I've been trying to think of some. But they were so funny and interesting, and, you know, he was such a good race caller and will be sorely missed, you know. And my condolences out to his family. And rest in peace, Larry. Maybe you'll be calling some order of finishes up there when it comes to jocks and trainers, which ones make it, which ones don't. But, he was definitely was missed as a race caller.
Yeah,
he was unique, just different. There's no, you can't even, you know, Frank was on, and Frank is the closest parallel is Frank when he would basically, you know, not play it straight, when he would have some fun with things, with whether it's the impressions, the vocal impressions, but for Letterman, it was just part of his approach. It was built in.
It was built in, but he didn't take away any of the, you know.
Yep.
It maybe add some humor to it, but when it came to the accuracy and the placing of the horses, he was spot on. And, you know, I was at Trax, of course, Garden State, when he was race caller there, and he always, when they said they're off, or he said they're off, he always listened. Because you wanted to see if he was going to connect something humorous with either the names of the horses or some situation that was going on at the particular time. But the last 2 days, I missed your show, and I'm sorry I missed some of the conversation about him. No, he certainly was an interesting guy.
Yeah, it was really today. I mean, because I only saw that word had come late in the show yesterday. So really, it was today with Paul Kornman and with Frank Miramati. One thing too, Tony, that obviously made me, you know, want to make sure that to get you, it was the conversation about Atlantic City and Garden State, and what the circuit entailed in that, particularly in that era, because you fold in Monmouth and even Meadowlands with their flat schedule. I mean, to have had four racetracks, in New Jersey like that, that it's a, you know, we still run at Monmouth, obviously, in Meadowlands, not as much with Meadowlands anymore. But I think people, you know, of a certain age that have become fans of the game, they probably can't envision what it was like to have that circuit.
Oh, absolutely. It was a great circuit, you know, and they would have meets, and the meets would be maybe 60 days or 90 days, you know, and you'd go from Garden State would open up, and you'd go from Garden State in the early spring or whatever, and then you'd go to Monmouth Park till near the end of the summer, then to Atlantic City, then back to Garden State in the fall, and by New Year, by the Thanksgiving, they usually were closing. But it was really interesting the way they did that. And you know, I live right by the Garden State complex, and I think of all the riders that touched base with the Garden State Jersey circuit. And then just 2 days ago, I got a call from Iris Zakor. That was Billy Zakor's wife, and she's very close with Walter Blum, and she was telling me he's having some health issues. And I'm thinking, geez, you know, every time I go past the old stable gate, I think of all those guys, Walter Blum, Frank Lovato, you know, Paul Kalai, Chris Rogers, all these names come to hand. And I'm going to give Walter, when it's a good time for him to be able to talk a few minutes, I'm going to give him a call. They were the mainstay riders in Jersey, Walter Blum. I thought to myself, I'll never forget a horse I rode one day. And Walter says, listen, son, you know, I watched you ride this horse a couple of times. You're just not getting him out of the gate. He says, next time he runs, I'll be on him and he'll win. And next time he was on him, and I never forgot the name of the horse, Busy Bobo. I forget the name of the trainer, but I never forgot the name of the horse. And Walter rode him next time, and he got him out of the gate in front, and he won. You know? And I'm thinking, all the memories that go past that Haddonfield Road stable gate. And then on Route 73, there's only one thing left of the old racetrack, and it was a clubhouse, red brick building. It was the clubhouse entrance, we used to call it. If you parked across the street, or if you parked at one of the lots across the street, you walked through that clubhouse entrance. And I just got a petition. They said they wanted to tear that building down. It doesn't interfere with anything. And I'm thinking, why tear down the last live memory of Cherry Hill and how it transformed the whole area? Garden State really transformed the area when it opened up and brought a lot of revenue. And I shop at Wegmans, and I always tell you, I go in there and shop. And I'm thinking, everybody used to complain about the traffic the racetrack brought to town for a few months a year. And now everybody's saying how much they miss it. And I'm thinking, yeah, and look at this complex that's built there. It's more traffic there. They had to take the old... They took the roundabout circle out and had to make it into an intersection. There's so much traffic. And I don't hear anybody complaining. But I signed a petition. Do not tear down that clubhouse entrance gate. It's such it's on the road, and it's a beautifully structured small gate. Doesn't interfere with anything. And it just brings back a lot of memories of how Garden State helped to build these small towns, Cherry Hill, Haddon Township, Haddonfield, Collingswood. Garden State built the revenue up on these small towns. And, you know, that's when we had the rickshaw and the Latin Casino, Sonelli's. All these places or restaurants are gone. Garden State's gone. And I have so many memories that go with the places that are gone. And it was the one memory I can remember, staying at the rickshaw inn and having a party. And I don't know how I didn't get arrested. I went down the hallway nude with our partying at the rickshaw. And none of these places are even there anymore. I saw Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin at the Latin Casino. Not there anymore. Had many function at Sonelli's restaurant, or the Sans Souci, or, you know, these other restaurants that are no longer there. But don't tear down that one clubhouse gate. I hope they don't. I signed a petition. Leave it up.
Well, and it's funny because I just put a search in. There was just I happen to be a subscriber to the Inquirer, the Philadelphia Inquirer, more for Eagles coverage than anything. And Inquirer does a great job. And there was a story just a couple of days ago, Tony, about this. In fact, the story was on Monday. Residents are trying to save a piece of Cherry Hill pop culture. History from the 50s and 60s.
And I'm so glad. I hope they can do so. And I'm glad they haven't forgot what helped to generate a lot of revenue and even population. You know, I go down Haddonfield Road and I'll see somebody walking down the road, and it brings back memories. Geez, there was guys that rubbed horses, maybe didn't have transportation, cars, and they'd be walking to the Cherry Hill Mall down these roads, you know, and I'm thinking, geez, it brings back so many memories. And that gate doesn't interfere with anything. I just hope they just leave it as is. It just is a reminder of what Garden State did for these towns around here, and it did so much.
Well, and there's pictures. There's a picture of it, and this is an extensive piece. I'll put a link up. Is that boy? There's also Tony. There's also a picture of April 14th, 1977, yeah. Of the entire right. building yeah. and smoldering.
Did you see the picture? Did I ever send you the picture of me, my ex-wife, and agent sitting there? I'm still in Mr. Ambezi's colors, Briardale Farm. We left through the second-story windows, and somebody snapped a picture and sent it to me from the press. And the place is an inferno, you know, the smoke. And I'm standing there with my agent on one side and my ex-wife on the other side. and we're watching it burn to the ground. And then we went in, because when we first, Rick Wilson won the race before it caught fire. We're galloping back and we see smoke and said, hey, Rick, maybe we'll get out of here early today. You know, like kids getting out of school. We said, get out of here early. But we went back, we checked for the next race, and about 20 minutes went by, and they said, evacuate the building. The fire is out of control. When we went to go down the second story, we were on the jock's room, we went down the hallway. By the time you got near the old wooden steps, there was orange flames and smoke and orange, but you couldn't even get near the steps. Went back to the jock's room, into the rec hall by the lunch counter, hung out the second story windows, dropped down to a porch roof. We threw all our tack out the window too. We went out the windows, hit a porch roof, hung off the porch roof, and tried to hit the top of the paddock fence on the tunnel fence. And if you didn't, you just fell another 3 feet. And that's how we left the building. And I got that picture, and I'm thinking, I'll send it to you if I didn't. But it's an interesting picture, and it's so many memories. And I'm glad the township does have some feeling for that gate. And the other day, I'm on Route 38, and there's the old sign on one of the overpasses. It's and the next exit, when you would get off of Route 38, and you'd go on to 70. Or whatever, had no King's Highway, whatever it was. And it says Garden State Park, and it's the old sign that says Garden State Park. It's still up there. They never even took that down. I thought, you know, I was, every once in a while I get these nostalgic memories, and I'm thinking, man, on certain days I say, I can remember going over there late to ride the last couple races, or boy, what a miserable day, all the rain and everything last couple of days. Boy, it was miserable going over there and riding races and it's raining and cold and whatever, but it brings back memories like that. But I hope they preserve that building.
I'm going to send the link up to it. And there's a series of great pictures of there's one guy in particular that is clearly spearheading this, and Cerucci is it Sam? Let me see, or Chris? What is it? I just saw it. Dan Cerucci, and I'll put the link up. It's an online petition, and it really is a handsome little building that should be preserved. I'm glad you brought this up. I've told you this story every time. The burning comes up of the building. I tell the story of my father taking me to Philadelphia. I had college interviews and visits at Penn and at Haverford, scheduled for April 15th. So my father and I, my father knew the area very well, from years of working with Jerry Wolman, who of course owned the Eagles and was a builder, and my dad's construction company, Green Manor Construction, worked a lot with Jerry Wolman. So he was in Philadelphia all the time. PSFS used to finance a lot of their construction, Society for Savings. And we get off of the Garden State Parkway, Cherry Hill, and the roads are all, there's like blockades. And So my father's front, he's like, well, I don't know what's going on here. So he kind of comes around one of the circles. There's, you know, all those traffic circles. And the next thing we know, we come up like a side street to a butt 70. And in front of us is the smoldering remains of Garden State Park.
Yeah.
And, you know, the roads were deserted because they were blocked from either direction. And I'll never forget it. I mean, just unbelievable. And we ended up working our way across the Walt Whitman Bridge. But I'll never forget it. And then, you know, to have the opportunity to talk to you and JJ and everybody else that was involved. And then I got to go to the new Garden State Park when I was working in the food business. Tartan Foods had a night at Garden State, I got at least to go to the new building before it. I mean, that was the most short-lived, the most beautiful new track that was short-lived. Yeah. I mean, that was tragic.
Yeah, I always say, I said, I rode there when it burnt down and left through the windows. I rode there when they rebuilt it and tore it down. And now I do my grocery shopping and go to Home Depot there. Right. You know, I was saying one day, I wish they would just put some kind of memento up of where the wire was, like they did at Franklin Mills Mall, which Liberty Bell was at Franklin Mills Mall. And they have one by one of the stores, this is where the wire was. And I'm thinking, man, it's interesting here. I rode horses past this point. And now I'm buying socks and underwear there.
You're the greatest. Mig is listening in as well. Kind of fun. Well, Tony, I wanted to get to you this morning, and I appreciate it. You know, the weather's warming up. But
I'll be out there. And you tell Mig, he's one of my favorite. And anytime we're out there again, you can come up on the inside of me. Mig, I'll let you through. Don't worry about it. You're the man. But, yeah, the weather's getting good, and I'm going out there. It's been a little nasty the last couple of days, but I got some horses to get on, and I'm going to start to feel like a jockey again, an old retired jockey. You take care. Keep up the good work, Steve. I'm going to try to listen to you now and get straightened out here. Appreciate all you do for racing. You're a booster, and we need more people like you in the game. Thank you for all you do. I love you, brother.
Love you, too. Tony Black, everybody, and some interesting topic that Tony brought up here. I'm going to send out I'll send out the links to this as well. I just retweeted Dave Grenning latched on to a tribute to Letterman by Dick Girardi. Larry Letterman, the very best of us, and just a very nice, looks like a very nice ode to him. And I'll send you the link for that as well. And this online petition, why not? You're going to see it's really kind of a cool, just a small brick building with three wrought iron gates. And in fact, looks like it could use a freshening. And I don't know, maybe you could turn it into like a little miniature museum. There's room, it looks like, in a small office area where people could, yeah, maybe. All right, look for that. Going to get to Jeff Franklin, and we'll dive into win using Thoroughgraph conversation. Where is that coming from? I'm sorry about that. I know people go crazy when there's a ding in the background. Oh, it's Tony sending me his picture. That's funny. I'll put that up too. All right, let's start doing some handicapping. Let's look at some sheets with Crafty. And you know, I should note one thing I keep forgetting to mention on Thursdays, and of course, you know, with the NFL season having ended, we haven't talked to Dave Hill, but you'll note, maybe remember that Dave was up for an award from poker interests for one of the pieces that he did, and he won that award. And I know I retweeted it, but I haven't mentioned publicly. Congratulations to Bill, who, speaking of literate and lyrical, he won that. He won that World Poker. The organization, with the presenting, but it looked like a big full ballroom, and he gave a terrific acceptance speech. So, congratulations to Dave. Jeff Franklin in the background joining us. Good morning.
Good morning, Steve. Good morning.
The I'm just reaching for last week. We'll do some recapping. You want to dive in? And of course.
I'm sorry. I thought you were going to take the mic there. So Okay, so the Honey Fox, I don't know about you, but I was about 18 million miles off on that one. Chili Flag won the race, and I viewed her as a marginal contender. Although, to both of our credit, we recognized going in that the race was a blanket race. Anybody could have won, but she would have been about my fifth or sixth choice. And the filly I was hoping would move forward, Spanson, did not. So that was that. And then, of course, the Fountain of Youth turned out to be a non-race, as it were, with the two scratches.
Well, and you know, between locked early and then Victory
or
Avenue
Speakeasy
in the morning, and then Speakeasy,
yeah,
you know, seconds before, there's not, you know, there, it was a non factor from a betting standpoint. I will say for all the frustration that people have expressed, just thinking back to the conversation I had with Gargan on Monday, and for Dornick, sometimes when a horse is forced into something that isn't necessarily their, you know, what they're going to be doing, you know, under ideal circumstances, you know, let's say a full field circumstances, it ends up being good for them. And you know, the occasional speed horse or horse that likes to attend the pace that misses the break and then has to get a lesson essentially in rating or, you know, coming from off the pace and passing horses. And all of a sudden, you know, they had something, you know, basically foisted on them, and they learn a new trick, and it adds to them, you know, to their ability and to their arsenal as a racehorse as they mature. Chuck Simon and I were talking this morning as I was driving in, and you know, we were talking about this crop, which looks like it's going to be a very solid group of 3-year-olds. But, you know, there's going to be an extensive set of them by the time we get past, you know, the first Saturday in April that are going to be really lightly raced. So, you know, having something happen to a horse that forces them, you know, into a not necessarily an uncomfortable position, but just something new to them. A lot of times it ends up being a long-term benefit.
That's right. And I remember many years ago, I was representing Robbie Davis, and Robbie was writing a filly for Richard Mandela named Reluctant Guest. She eventually won the Beverly D. And during the running of, the second or third time he rode her, something happened where he had to change his hold or steady or something like that. And he told me afterward, he said, "Oh, now I really know how to ride this filly." He said, "I never would have done this, but," he said, "you know, I learned this, and this is," and boom, from there, I think we won the next 3 grade 1 stakes on her. So, you know, rather be lucky than good, right? So, yeah, in this case, a new talent. There you go. A new weapon in the arsenal.
Yeah, it's especially the ones that, you know, that either get tangled up or have horses, you know, compromise them off the break, and suddenly they find themselves
exactly
behind horses and taking, whether it's taking dirt or whether it's, you know, just circling the field or, you know, coming up in between horses, and it's something they've never done. Invariably, you end up, you know, they end up, and it's not something you can teach. I mean, I know, for instance, Todd Pletcher, you'll see Pletcher when he has sets go out, and sometimes when he does sets of 3 when he's trying to educate a young horse, and you know, he'll place them in each of the 3 slots between horses, on the outside, on the inside, and you're basically trying to, you know, get a horse to learn how to be comfortable wherever, you know, with whatever circumstance they're going to encounter. And you know, we say, "Oh, well, they're animals." They're animals with the mental capacity of a 3-year-old child. And so you can teach them, and there's some that are, you only have to show them something once, and it registers. So there's a lot that goes into this, and you know, a good horse that takes care of itself and you know is an easy keeper, as they say, and one that can be taught lessons. They become that. That's what was so amazing about American Pharoah, that you had a, you know, Baffert had a horse that, you know, it did anything he was asked.
Oh my gosh, yes. What a brilliant racehorse. Fully agreed. So, so that's the recap from last week. And do you mind if I dive into the Florida Oaks?
No, let's go. Go ahead. Absolutely.
I am fascinated by the rail filly, Poolside with Slim. Her numbers are, you know, in the top two or three in the race. But more importantly, for those folks that have the Thoroughgraph sheets that we email out every week in front of you, her dirt races should just be a portent of things to come, because now she's going to be on the turf. This is what she's bred to do top and bottom. I could see her moving up 4 to 5 lengths and with a good trip, cremating this field. I'm just praying that she gets a good trip and see if she moves up like I think she will. The Thoroughgraph Index on the lower left, for the folks that have this in front of them, will show, just from a sire profile, Steve, Jerry's assigned a 17 and a quarter to all the Churchill's dirt races, all the progeny of Churchill, whereas his turf progeny run essentially 11 and a quarters. So we're talking about, that's about as wide a spread as you'll see. Now, granted, it's a small sample, but it is an interesting data point. And we're talking about Irish breeding top and bottom. I can't wait to see this filly on the turf. How about you?
Well, I mentioned Poolside with Slim, and have gotten very friendly with Patrick Lewis. He's come in on our Motown 3-year-old, and last week was about as frustrating a scenario as an owner could possibly endure. He's part of the Victory Avenue team. And even the week before at Tampa in that turf sprint, dropped the jock in the filly race. And we actually had a frustrating experience with Landauer's debut. So Patrick is due for some good luck, frankly, and they've been really excited by, you know, what progress Poolside with Slim has made with that debut at Turfway. Just missed behind not just a nice horse, that nice as pie, but there's been that's become a key race, that debut. January 3rd, and then the romping victory, but absolutely designed for turf. Not that synthetic doesn't, you know, mirror turf for the most part. So Poolside with Slim, absolutely a major player in here, and paired up 10 and 3 quarters coming in, which essentially is, you know, is as fast as really only one other, I think. It was
Destiny Star.
Yeah, Tim. I mentioned this morning when I went over the draws of these races, and that Tim Ham's filly, absolutely a Catholic Boy filly. The Catholic Boys, they did not have a great start. It seemed as 2-year-olds, but it looks like, and let's be honest, he was a horse himself that didn't get good until his 3-year-old year. It feels like they're going to be, you know, steady developing progeny types. And that was a big, really the last two steps forward. And the transition from a 5-furlong turf sprint to the 1-mile allowance win, also a good sign. And, absolutely. Then you got to fold in what we're going to see from the Chad Brown fillies.
Right. And not to mention austere. So, the race gets complicated to me if Poolside doesn't fire, because I can make the case, naturally, when we see certain fillies like an austere that ran a 10 early on at Kentucky Downs and now has had 6 months to mature, well, she'd project to run a 7 or 8, something like that, on Saturday. And so all of these fillies are going to run new tops. Several of them will run new tops. And you all know now that I'm interested in the rail filly. Let's see, how the race develops thereafter.
In terms of the figures and the pattern reads, dynamic pricing from Chad. And this is, nobody has done more to expose American handicappers, obscure stallions from around the world than Seth Klarman. They've had so much fun, he and Chad, and the parties involved in finding offbeat pedigrees, and that actually includes domestics. I mean, as it happens, Klarman is, you think about cloud computing, for instance. I mean, he's had more success with fairly mundane stallions. He's made a habit of buying at sales, buying the best physical individuals of what otherwise were, not heralded pages. And here's a Knight of Thunder filly that is paired tens and change. Dynamic pricing. I'd be anxious to see what the pricing is when the odds are attached to this field. And then weigh the risks, the Mendelsohn filly, and they drew next to each other, Jose Ortiz aboard Dynamic Pricing, IRAD aboard Weigh the Risks, starts off a little slower, Jeff, but we've seen this from Chad before.
Yes.
Here's a pair of 13s.
Yes.
I mean, this horse is going to go forward, certainly, and can she go forward enough to impact this? She's going to be probably at least twice, maybe three times the price, I'm going to guess. I mean, for those looking just at buyers, for instance, a pair of 62s for Weigh the Risks, a 73 and an 86 in the two starts for Dynamic Pricing. So, Weigh the Risks is going to be what, 8-1 and probably 5-2 on Dynamic Pricing?
Yeah, those are good estimates, actually. And I think... taking the segue back to American Pharoah, of course, Bill Mott's filly, also has really no established level. She can jump forward. And I happen to love fillies that have a little bit of rest in between their starts. She's been given, about 70 days or so. This is perfect for her. So, what a nice group of fillies. And I think we'll let the odd board guide us to some extent. At least I will. But, I think you've nailed a couple of intriguing options here. And I agree with you. How many times with Chad's horses have we seen them lay low and then they don't move forward 2 points, they move forward 7 or 8? I mean, the guy's just a brilliant developer of a racehorse. What can I say?
Well, and this Weigh the Risks happens to fit that profile that I bring up on a regular basis, because the last time we saw her was in the Maiden Breaker closing weekend at Saratoga. So September 3rd. So she had all of September, October, November, December, January, February.
Yep.
She's been off 6 months. This is, people are going to see those figures and they're going to say, well, she's a little slow coming in. Except that this isn't September. This isn't October of last year. It's 6 months later. And obviously they put her away. She's been working steadily since January. So it's not, they made the choice. They broke the maiden. And, whether there was some kind of something, that necessitated putting her away for a little bit. So let's look, for instance, at Mendelsohn's numbers from 2 to 3. On the third graph index, and when you're looking at these sheets, folks, look at Mendelsohn and look at the TGI, the third graph index, for 2-year-old, 3-year-old, 4-year-old, 5 and up. And you can see that the index for Mendelsohn's is a 19.25. And then they improve on average. They improve 4 points. Their average as 3-year-olds is a 15.25. So that's 4 points of improvement. Well, let's consider that Weigh the Risks can come back, Saturday and be potentially 4 points better. That's a nine, and that's exactly where her stablemate is and where Poolside with Slim is and where Tim Ham's Destiny Star is. So she's as fast probably on healthy age development as the horses that have recency. So that's why, you know, 6-1, let's say, give or take, is going to be value on Weigh the Risks.
And, you know, you just use a couple words, age development, that I don't use enough, but it's very descriptive. And it's a great reminder to folks that are looking at the sheets that you don't take a point in time as an August 2-year-old and consider that to be definitive. You use that as a launching pad to project to a new number as a 3-year-old, as you're saying. And so an 8 or a 9 would not be even remotely unreasonable, particularly for somebody like Chad, who does not send out a short horse.
What else caught your eye? Some isolated tops, maybe, that and some hints at potential. You mentioned Austere. We should probably include in the conversation Whit Watersrand, the Gary Barber from Cassie, who draws wide because this is first-time turf for this daughter of Connect. And she, you know, had a very good 2-year-old year. You understand Cassie and Barber trying her on dirt. That came in the forward gal. And then, you know, essentially they're telling you, well, you know, she's a synthetic slash turf horse. She's already won a grade 3 going the trip, the mile and a 16th. And she's going to be 10-1.
Yeah. And you know, that pose to me naturally is potentially a killer, particularly with lightly raced horses going into that first turn. Gosh, I always want to just cover my eyes and just say, please don't get carried out by somebody, please. So I guess I discount that. Maybe I put too much weighting in it, but it scares the pants off me.
Well, so this they're coming out of the chute. And so essentially Gallardo, I mean, certainly.
Oh, no, that's right. That's right.
Gallardo has as much of a knowledge of this course as anybody. And, you know, by the time they reach the main oval, you know, this is a horse that likes to stalk. You would think that Gallardo can find a comfortable place. I mean, in fact, the three horses inside of her, Dynamic Pricing, Weigh the Risks, and Dancing in Dixie, they all feel like horses that are you know, going to, I don't want to say dawdle. Really, the first horse with any early lick appears to be Destiny Star. I would think Gallardo is able to find a comfortable spot in the 2-3 path pretty easily by the time they exit the chute.
Good point. Yep, the race shape does favor her being able to get good position. You're right. For her, hopefully, the field will spread out, and it shouldn't be that big a deal.
Yeah, that's...
No, you're right. I'm standing down from that, from my earlier comment.
Okay. All right, who else? What else is in here?
Well, I'm really a little interested in Pharaoh's Wine, Dale Roman's filly, just because she made a quarter point move, and often, you know, two of my favorite words, coiled spring. Sometimes it's as if she just is getting ready to explode now. You know, these horses sometimes fit into patterns, or sometimes they tip when they're about to do something they've never done before. And that's a pattern that's often worked for me, where the quarter point move off of an extended base. She had a few races pretty much in that area. And particularly that she was off poorly. Wouldn't surprise me if she moved forward. So, and the other one we did not discuss, you know, Destiny Star, given the speed, she does have the fastest sheer number in the race on this turf course. So if she should turn out to be controlling speed, that would be certainly something to contend with.
I want to bring up two fairly proficient turf trainers. Mott has got Waskasui and Clement has got Style Points. Start with Style Points because this is an interesting sheet. 16, 13 and a half, 11 and a quarter, marching forward. And You don't see this too often. If you look at the thorough pattern, and thorough pattern is the line that shows the number, you know, the starts with horses that are showing this pattern. In this particular case, it's a top, obviously, in the first start, then a new top, then another new top. According to thorough pattern, and there's only seven other comparable scenarios to use, 71%, five of the seven horses that started like this, that ran three straight tops, run a new top. So you have to at least think that Style Points is a player in here. And then there's Waskiswi, I'm going to guess that's how it's pronounced, with a pair of tens off of the November maiden breaker, and then the try at Gulfstream in the Ginger Brew, where she was a solid third behind Ozara and Life's Inaudible. And of course, Life's Inaudible came back to win her subsequent stake start, and then just got beat Saturday at Gulfstream.
Right. And Bill's Filly, if you really look at it, is kind of a classic developing pattern. All she's done, it seems, is move forward and overcome every challenge put in front of her. And there's that quarter point move again. So coiled spring, getting ready to rock. She's possibly my second choice in the race.
Well, and this, you know, you can go into this race, and it's very funny. David Aragona, I just retweeted David, who said, with all due respect to everything else going on at Tampa Saturday, the best race of the day is the Florida Oaks.
Right.
So David, sees the same thing. This really does feel like a race where you go in and you've got your own pecking order. But when it comes to building your ticket, you're absolutely going to play the board. And, you know, you very well may see a scenario. I mean, with a field this size, you've got the option. I mean, there's going to be, I would say, more than one of this group of 12 that is going to end up being absolutely lost on the board and slip through the cracks. There's going to be somebody 12 to 1, 14 to 1 here that has no business being that price. And
there
that, as Thoroughgraph players, you then key off of a horse like that, a horse that's just a silly overlay given what their pattern indicates that they are fully capable of winning. And that's, you know, that's how Jerry plays and Alan and everybody that, you know, that there's plenty of Thoroughgraph users that, you know, only bet those horses. And you don't, you know, your strike rate, you don't have to be right as often when, you know, the typical horse that you key is a $30 horse. You can clean up a lot of messes with the kinds of horses that present themselves with this opportunity.
Exactly. And this game is not to me about picking winners. It's about picking value, isolating value. And so I'd rather pass on a race where I just have no idea and wait for that, you know, that 14 to 1 shot that should be 9 to 2.
Yep.
There you go.
That is what we're after here. And that's why we're doing these exercises.
That's right.
I'm just watching here as, I mean, there's no racing today, but they've got the grade all going here, and this is the second pass of the grade all, essentially taking everything from the rail and spreading it out into the middle of the track. They've been working this track the entire morning after training ended, easily the last hour and a half, 2 hours. Interesting. We'll see if this is the last time they use the grade all. And the grade all, of course, scrapes, you know, it's the blade that you know, the way a track, you know, the crown of a track, then you get weather. The track slides, you know, the dirt, the cushion slides toward the rail, and that's why they have to do this. And they redistribute the cushion, and they try to do it evenly, but there's, you know, there's conditions that will sometimes, you know, that's how you get biases occasionally. And I haven't looked ahead at the weather tomorrow and Saturday, but I'm gonna go out on a limb and tell you that tomorrow speed should be good here, assuming that we don't get any weather interruption. All right, let's shift our gears. Unless you looked at anything else at Tampa that you want to any.
No. I think it's okay. Let's go west now.
All right, the Beholder Mile, and I wanted to do a turf race and a dirt race, and I was excited that the Beholder Mile came up the way it did. And for those that are looking, just as an aside, if you're going to take the Saturday Santa Anita card as part of your selections for Thoroughgraph Saturday, the Santa Isabel, I know it's being presented as Kinza and nothing else, but you're going to be surprised when you see the figs, because it's not just Kinza and nobody else. That's a good race. But then there's this Beholder Mile where Todd Pletcher and Mike Rapoli, who gobbled up Interstate Daydream, they're sending her out for a grade one chance and trying to enhance the value of this five-year-old mare, making her five-year-old mare debut. But there's a Dare Manor for Baffert, last seen in the Breeders' Cup Distaff. Never really got in position that she likes. She typically likes to be on the point, and she was trailing throughout and wasn't able to make up ground, but only beaten three. And then there's some other intriguing prospects. How did you see the Beholder Mile?
Well, obviously, Interstate Daydream, we'll all be fascinated to see how she goes from east to west, new connections, would seem to have a running style that could be interesting here. Before I get too much into the horses, I have to remind everybody, we've had this bizarre interruption of training week in and week out here. I'm looking for my office here in Monrovia, not far from Santa Anita. Beautiful skies. I don't know why they shut the track in today, but they did. So this interrupted training has been a variable for West Coast handicapping, as horses sometimes 1, 2, 3, 4 days are forced to stay in their stalls or just walk, I should say, barn walk. All that being said, I don't think it's a major factor just losing a day of training today. But we do have a really interesting scenario as Michael McCarthy's filly, Sweet Azteca, who is a fast, fast filly, is going to try two turns for the first time. And I don't see anything pedigree-wise, et cetera, that says she's supposed to blast off going two turns. But having watched her visually, she's a bit of a beast. And it'll be interesting to see her in a Dairy Manor, who from the two-hole, JJ's going to blast off with her for sure. So this could be a really interesting pace scenario. And not to mention Green Up and some of the others. So interesting, again, that Interstate Daydream, I think, could lay back and make a really nice run at them. From a numbers perspective, there are about three fillies, a Dairy Manor, Green Up, and Interstate Daydream. They all run somewhere between a 1 to a 2. They're very, very consistent mares. So to me, the intrigue of the race, east to west, and Sweet Azteca going two turns for the first time.
I can see it. The interesting horse that for me that I was surprised that I expected to be excited about, and then when I looked at her page, I've been a Desert Dawn fan from early on, and she, you know, she's amassed she should go blast through a million in earnings on Saturday, but I was surprised that the La Cañada victory really was not, you know, anything from a fig standpoint. It wasn't anything, revolutionary. She, in fact, she actually moved a little bit backwards to a 4.5, and she has never, shockingly, she's never gotten below a 3, and yet she's able to compete at the highest level. And what do you make of her? Because she's a horse that a lot of us like to bet, and she just, I mean, obviously running into a Dare Manor didn't help all last summer, but, you know, and then Idiomatic in the Distaff, of course, and even Midnight Memories in the Bayakoa over at Los Al. But, I mean, she has kept the nicest company and, you know, runs consistently well without winning much.
We've seen what she's all about. She's told us she'll run a 3 or a 4. She's consistent. And if a 3 or 4 can win a race, she can win it. But it's not going to win on Saturday.
No. And, nope. and it's funny. Cupid has got a handful of isolated, really nice horses, but has been just sort of a meh stallion. He's got 16 stake winners, including Desert Dawn. She's got something, or Cupid has something that is a curiosity, and it's a very small sample, but the 5 and up number with just 33 starts, this is her first crop of 5-year-olds. Right now, it doesn't look like they're getting much better. They improve considerably from 3 to 4, but it schools out as a mature. You know, horses keep maturing up till age 5, and it doesn't feel like the Cupid progeny are you know, going to have a next level, like, let's say, the way English Channels do as older horses.
Yeah, and you know, Steve, on this show, you cite that aspect of the TGIs that I think is very, very overlooked. And, you know, when you've got, in some cases, 500 or 600 horses that are giving you indications that, yeah, I'm gonna be better from 3 to 4, 4 to 5, whatever it may be, and you overlook that, you do that at your own peril. It's great data. And, you know, as handicappers, I think it's really overlooked. And yet you bring it up a lot, and I think it's smart.
It's one of my favorite things. I sheet methodology between Thorograph and Ragazin, I mean, have really kind of revolutionized in a lot of ways handicapping and also training patterns. I've got a very famous Bobby Frankel anecdote that you'll appreciate in a second. But to me, what makes this product, the premium performance figure product of choice, is the trainer stats and the stallion stats. And all of these added, I mean, Jerry could have simply, you know, created the product and just work the figures and just provide a performance figure, but he's constantly adding innovation and things like the index for the stallion and the thorough pattern. These are things that are a value add that are just, you know, make to me is the differential when it comes to this. And because, listen, this is expensive. It's not a cheap product, but it's a product that the minute you cash your first ticket, you realize it pays for itself, essentially. And those added categories and those added data points is what makes this invaluable.
Well, and you know, to support or paraphrase what you just said, you know, I've been using the Thorograph since I was an agent for Gary Stevens back in the 90s. And everybody said to me, what do you think sets the product apart? And here's the whole key. The sheets are not a snapshot in time. They're basically a holistic view of a horse's accomplishments and an ability to project reasonably what's going to come in the next start. And many other handicapping data products are the snapshots in time, and now it's up to you to figure things out. But not so with the sheets. It's all about what's coming up in the next race. And so I've been hooked for 30 years on the darn thing. So,
well,
so
my,
thank you.
My Frankel anecdote, when Saratoga customers would go to the binocular stand and buy the Thoragraph book, the booklet, the you know, that was that was collated and would come up on the bus from the city. Frankel used to hang out at the barbecue with us, and somebody had the booklet and asked Frankel for an autograph, and he signed it, "My horses don't bounce, Bobby Frankel."
Oh, is that funny?
Yeah, because
you know, something about Bobby, who I was privileged to call a, you know, a friend, a real friend, and he would tell jocks when they would ride races, save ground. I don't care what happens during the run. And this is basically his turf horses, because that's what he specialized in, of course. I don't care what happens. Save ground till you hit the point of the last turn, and then what happens, happens. If anything happens during the running of the race and you lose because of that, you will ride the horse back. I will not take you off. And so he understood ground loss. And Bobby and I had, I don't know, quadrillion conversations about sheep theory and how to win races and such. And he was just a bloody genius, that guy. He really saw things that other people didn't see. And it was a pleasure to know him and talk to him.
Well,
I miss him.
Yeah. You know, we had this conversation about Larry Letterman, 67. You know, there's no Bobby should be around, too. I mean, how old was Bobby when he passed?
Like late 60s, 68, I think he was.
In that range.
Yeah.
I mean, certainly no more than, you know, than 70. A privilege and funny. acerbic and funny. Literally, you know, came out of the grandstand at Aqueduct. And just said to him, was watching horses and said, "Jesus, I can do this. I can train these horses." became a legend. Amazing.
And, you know, the thing that I love so much about Bobby was, for those of us who got to hang out with him after the races, like so many guys, he was so intense in the morning and at the races. He really just poured his guts into it. But then you take him out and have a Long Island iced tea with him afterward, and he was such a crack up. And, you know, for so many people, again, who only saw him as the Bobby Frankel master trainer, they never had a chance to see that side of him. In fact, Johnny D and I used to take him out for Del Mar all the time. We'd stay out till wee hours and just listen to Frankel stories, and they would go on and on and on. It was, what a joy, boy. How lucky I was. So, Bobby Frankel.
Well, I'm glad we went in this direction. I appreciate it. All right, Jeff, what else? Anything else?
No, except looking forward to talk to you next week. Hopefully we'll have some additional cash in our betting accounts.
Oh, exactly right. And next week's a quiet. We'll be at Vegas. And, oh, by the way, we how about a quick advisory? Are you coming, by the way, to NHC?
No. I have some other business. In fact, the next couple of weeks are crazy for me business wise, so I won't be able to make it.
Well, because for those any of you that use Thoragraph, and are going out to Vegas, let Jeff, let Jerry, let anybody in the office know, because of course figures will be available.
That's right. And to that end, if anybody does need to contact me on anything you hear on the show or any questions at all, it's easy. I'm Jeff@Thorograph.com, and I answer each and every email that I receive.
Jeff Franklin, everybody. Crafty JF. Not that he's much of a Twitterer. But he is on there, and you should maybe wade into it a little bit and pass along some information, some thoughts, opinions.
When I grow up, I'll do it, Steve. When I grow up.
I love it. Jeff, I appreciate it. We'll talk to you. I'll be at Vegas next Thursday. It'll be first day broadcasting from the Horseshoe.
I'll look forward to it. Thanks, Steve.
Thanks so much. That was great. Jeff Franklin. There's potential here for with Rich going to be sitting in Vegas. There's a potential here these last 20 minutes. I'm going to see if he will join us. I'm not positive. I know that he and I had talked about it last week. Are you available? Do you want to do this now? All right, here we go.
Car driving to the Houston Astros baseball game. I guess the service will stay up.
There you go. Where's their Osceola, right?
They're playing the Cardinals today in Roger Dean Stadium in Jupiter.
Very nice. All right. Well, Rusty Arnold joins us, and I guess the word is out, Rusty, because a statement from you about a 7-day suspension, and you would have let me know last week that this was coming. Your thoughts, explain, your reaction to this and your approach to it.
Well, yeah, I knew it was coming. I was a little bit disappointed yesterday that I read about it on their website without any contact from them to tell me that the B sample had come back and that they were going to put it on our website. I thought that I should have gained the respect of a phone call or an email, but I didn't. And I had people started calling me that it was on the website. So there it is.
This is explain what the positive is and what your thoughts were when you were initially contacted and what the metabolite represents.
Well, we ran Affiliate Maiden at Turfway on December 27th, I think, 26th or 7th. I think it's 27th. And 31 days later, I got an email from Heisa that she had come back positive for metabolite of Tramadol. Tramadol is a human painkiller. I think they use it in dogs, too. I'm not positive with the drug. I know it's a post-operation painkiller. Don't know where it came from. Don't know how it got there. Have no idea. Can tell you one thing. Have not given Figgy Tramadol or any horse that I have ever had in my position Tramadol. So, we were charged, and your options were to accept a 15-day penalty, a loss of purse, and 2 points against your record and a $1,000 fine, or ask for a split sample, see what it comes back, see if it confirmed it. Obviously, I took the split, which was $1,250, a little more, than you would think. But I had to, take a chance that it would come back negative. But for one, the owner was losing $40,000. And then after another, it was on December 27th, and it was yesterday was March 6th before I heard back from them. And they opened up the website. People did was on there that evidently the B sample had come back. They were disqualifying the horse and taking a purse. And in the end, they said, if you plead guilty and don't go to a hearing, we'll only give you 7 days, which I chose to do because I've got Keeneland and Churchill coming up, which I spend all my winter getting ready for those meets. I didn't want to have this happen in the middle of it. So that's where I stand right now. I don't deny that Tramadol was in the horse because science tells you it was. But I don't think there's a case more of contamination, because of the level. I've been told is so minute that it's unbelievable. I've got it, and after talking to some chemists, I mean, it was a extremely, extremely low level of tramadol, and we think they're getting these things into receiving barn from either horses the day before, horses that morning. These stalls are used multiple times. They're used in the morning for work and go stalls where people ship in, work, and leave. And they're used the night before up until about 10 or 11 o'clock. They're cleaned out. Are they sanitized? Nope. Are they disinfected? Nope. They're cleaned out. And I think there's enough, the way the testing has gotten so good that they can pick up such low levels. And I think there's going to have to be some common sense used before this is all over at these low levels. That my information is that the level of this horse, and I've got it on a paper right in front of me, is so low, it's like a tenth of what a human would be affected by. It has zero effect on a horse.
Rusty, you've got a very detailed and articulate statement that HBPA released, and you told me last week that you were not going to fight this because you wanted it to be an opportunity, essentially stand up for horsemen under the current scenario that everybody is facing. No one is going to confuse you with somebody that's notorious for taking an edge. And I imagine that your situation will affect a number of people who want to just summarily support whatever Hysa and Haiwu is doing as something that's going to save the industry. This is not saving the industry.
Well, I was never anti-Hysa. I think a governing body is good. But as I said, the Major League Baseball, the NBA, the NFL all have players unions, and they work on the process with the ownership. They have representation, and my biggest deal and why I wanted to speak up is because I think we have to have some representation at the table. Our livelihoods are out there. I mean, the gentleman that got the two-year ban, two nights later than me, I don't know him. I think it starts with an H. But my understanding is he has five horses. He was four or five stalls away from me, has never had any type of major infractions. And he had a banned substance, not a controlled substance. And you're out. You're out immediately. They don't even question. You don't get to defend yourself. You get nothing. And I just think some of it's got to stop, and there's got to be some common sense using these things. And when there's this much, my understanding is there's 30 million prescriptions of tramadol out in the market as of now. And there's that much out there. It's there. It's real. It's not fake. It's not made up. And we've got to stop these accusations of every horse that gets these is somebody's giving it to them, because I don't think anybody is intentionally giving it in these circumstances. And I think Hysa can tell the difference. I think they know who's intentionally trying to cheat and who isn't. And right now, they're not discriminating between the two.
Is there in the process, and you bring up one part of the process which has vexed them a little bit, and that is their communication skills, in terms of essentially posting the results of something without giving you any notice as the second half of the testing process. I had asked you last week if you would reach out to Alan Foreman. What part of this can you envision being improved?
Well, I will say that Haiwu had an attorney. Her name was Geneva. I've got all of it written down that I spoke to by email on several occasions. It could not have been better. She could not have been nicer and could have not have been better at helping me through the process. She helped me answer the charges. She helped me get the email in. She told me what days they needed to be in, what days your answers needed to be in. And she even after yesterday when the charges were levied, she helped me do these forms to accept the penalty. It's called an acceptance of the infraction, and she led me through the whole process. I couldn't thank her enough. She was great. I did talk to Alan Foreman on Monday, the first time I ever talked to him, and I said, look, it's been 37 days since they took the B sample, and I've had no contact other than that they took the B sample, and he said, I'm going to check into it. Alan was great also. And he said that he checked into it, he talked to them, and that they thought they would have it back on Wednesday, and that they would give me the results on Wednesday. I had failed, or had reluctantly, I thought, not told my owners, other than the one that owned that filly, that there was a chance I was going to be facing sanctions. I didn't want to do that until the B sample came back. So I thought as soon as it came back, I would have hours or days to explain it to everybody, and then there it came. No time. I had owners calling me, telling me that I was getting suspended, which I thought was very disappointing. I felt that was on Ben Mosher, because my contact with him has not been pretty. It's been a little bit bitter, and I thought that he could have made an attempt to let it know, and I'm not positive, and I have no proof. I'm not sure he intentionally didn't put it out that way.
Rusty, for those that aren't familiar with your record, you're 70 or 78 wins away from 2,000 in your career. You've had the same size barn forever. You train only the horses that you can put your hands on daily. What, if any, prior medication violations have you dealt with?
In 2000, I had a Rimadyl positive for a filly at Delaware Park. That was in my 24th year of training. It was my first one. And she was on Rimadyl. It was obviously a barn mistake. She didn't come off of it, in time. We didn't withdraw her in time. We were fine. We lost the purse. And that was the last one I had until this one. And that was 20-some years ago. I take that back. We had an overage of Banamine about 15 years ago because of vet practice, not pointing anybody out. They had two vets treat the same horse on the same day at different times. It was just a mistake. The horse ran, and it wasn't even a loss of purse. It was a $250 fine. Those are my two medication problems in 48 years. And I hold that, very dear to me. I think for nothing else in this business, I have to win the Hall of Fame. I don't have that kind of record, but I tell you what I have the respect of my peers that I do everything the right way, and that means a lot.
I wanted that out there because for all of the aspirations and all of the intentions of those that wanted to see this authority put in place, the Rusty Arnolds of the world are not the problem. If this does not galvanize some people, then I don't know what will. Because there's been there's been any number. Mike Lauer, another guy. There's been these small. You mentioned some small outfits. There's a story that I'm sure will come to light from a guy with eight horses in at Penn National who they're out of existence. This is not what was intended or promised. And while they've been responsive to concerns and to missteps, this is not a way. This is not a path forward.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure. I just don't think this is what we signed up for, in my opinion. And every time something goes wrong and they say, we're sorry, we didn't mean to do that, that's another reputation that gets tarnished. and pushes it down the road. And I'll have to tell you who else, and I have never been a close, people are going to say, oh, you're his best friend, but Eric Hamelback has given me a lot of help to guide me through this. He's more experienced at it than I am, and I know he's been up against the HPBA, or he's been taking the HPBA up against HISA, and one of the few people thought it out, and people better start getting together and backing them and get a group together, because they're fighting for these guys. They're trying to help them out, and we're not standing as a number right now. We're going to have to stand as a number. You know, HISA is a creation of a very small group. I'm not against HISA, but they're a creation of a small group. We're a large group. And we're going to have to stand together, not to dismiss HISA, because that's not going. They're the law of the land. We understand that. That's what they got put in. But they've got to use us. They got to work with us, and they got to make us a part of the process.
Well, and then they've put people on, respected horsemen on the advisory teams, but some of the practical application here and some of the mechanics have got to be addressed, and for them not to let you know and let you have the opportunity to inform your owners. I mean, by now you've talked, I'm sure, to a few. And speaking of which, I mean, Red Carpet Ready is looking here, and we've also been talking just this morning about the filly in the Oaks. How is this going to affect the horses that are entered?
Before I went into my agreement with them, they told me all horses that I had entered could run, which is a change from their original policy. I remember when Ray Handel, they just started scratching all of his. I mean, and again, every time they'll react to a problem that they saw was a mistake. But I'm telling you this, I'm sorry isn't getting it anymore. You know, when people are getting damaged, the owners are getting damaged, and then after it's over, they say, well, we're sorry, probably shouldn't have done that. When Englehart's clenbuterol positive came out, they said, well, we're sorry, that probably should not have come out till after we confirmed when he got it. Yeah, that's great, but it's the old thing. The horse is out of the stall, baby. It's too late to get him back.
So, for instance, Poolside with Slim in the Oaks and Red Carpet, will they run under your name, or do they have?
They run under my name. They're good to go.
Interesting.
They have no issues. That's new in their policy. That's very new.
Well, and they've been basically rewriting rules as they go. That's part of the.
That's for sure.
Yeah.
That's part of the process. And they're making some good new rules. I mean, they're making some good adjustments. But again, the guy that got damaged to cause them to make the adjustment doesn't help him a whole lot.
Well. What reaction have you gotten from Bo Bromigen and from Patrick and the company?
I have 100% backing, and 2D1 said, if you can't run while you're suspended, don't enter.
Well, so you, the one good thing, I guess, is you can take these 7 days, the way jockeys take their days?
Nope, I'm taking them starting Saturday. And they'll go till next Saturday. But horses that were already in the race before this got agreement, they get to race. It does not affect it at all.
Very good. All right. Well, where are we going to see you Saturday?
You'll see. I'll be at Gulfstream.
Okay. I'm over at Tampa. Obviously, safe travels. Enjoy the game today. And I'll repeat what I said, that. The words of Rusty Arnold will carry some weight with those that haven't thought this through.
Yeah, the one thing that I said, Steve, which I am a firm believer in, and I don't know who will read it, I don't know who'll believe anything, but if you believe that you're void of this or your turn's not coming, you're wrong, because it could happen to anybody out there, especially ship installs. That's the most danger. You're coming out of your own barn where you have control of it, probably have a way less chance, but when you're shipping, you've got a lot bigger chance, and everybody better wake up if they think it can't happen to them.
Rusty Arnold, everybody. Rusty, thank you.
All right, Steve. Thanks for the call.
Rusty Arnold, everybody, and you will see his extensive statement that was being circulated by the National HBPA. And Rusty Arnold, folks, this is who's being dragnetted. You know what? I don't have to say anything. That's one of the reasons I was eager to let Rusty explain the situation that he's confronted, and he's to be admired for, you know, using this as an opportunity to alert stakeholders and other horsemen and you know, players and fans to what's going on here, because this can't operate like this. Going to send you out into the race day. It's Thursday, and there's plenty to enjoy. So best of luck. Back with you tomorrow. Twin Spires weekend preview, and lots of Tampa, lots of Santa Anita, and there's some other good options too. We haven't even had a chance to dig into. Thanks to Rusty. Jeff Franklin, Win Using Thorograph, Tony Black, Shannon Arvin from Keeneland, and of course, Paul Kornman and Frank Miramati paying tribute to Larry Letterman. Talk to you in the morning.
Summertime song, fall on the apple. Lord, there goes a Buick 49, black sheep of the angels riding down the line. We think there is